Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. He is serving his third term in Congress, but Maryland Congressman Anthony Brown is not seeking a fourth term. Instead, he wants to go back to where his political career started, Annapolis. And this time, he wants to be Maryland's Attorney General. Brian Frosch, the current AG, is not seeking re-election. Well, tonight, we're talking to Congressman Brown about that and a whole lot of other issues. And he joins us now to answer our questions and yours. Lines are open. Give us a call. If you have a question or a comment for Maryland's 4th Congressional District Congressman, Anthony Brown, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Congressman Brown, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Harold, it's great to be on.
Good to talk to you.
Time.
Absolutely. Tomorrow's Veterans Day, by the way. I want to wish you a happy early Veterans Day.
Well, thank you. Veterans Day, Veterans Week, Veterans Year. We need to be thanking our men and women who served in our armed forces, and not just by saying thank you, but, you know, through actions. And I hope that as a nation we can do a little bit better in making sure that we're supporting our veterans, whether they're, you know, in need of health care, educational opportunities, employment opportunities. That's what this nation owes to our veterans. So tomorrow is a big day. We'll celebrate our veterans, and let's make sure that we sort of translate that gratitude into action on their behalf.
Absolutely. So let's talk about your plans on not running for re-election in the House of Representatives and running for Attorney General in Maryland. Why are you doing that?
Yeah, and I think you have it a little bit reversed, right? We should be focusing on why I'm running for Attorney General. And because I'm running for Attorney General, I won't be running for re-election. Because, look, Congress has been an extraordinary opportunity for me and the team that I put together to make a difference on important issues, whether it was, you know, the work that we've done to ensure that men and women who serve in uniform are treated equally under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, the military justice system, our efforts to root out extremism in the military, or the work that we've done on domestic violence, on transportation and infrastructure. Across the board, we've done a lot of good things over the last 5 years in my office with my great team. But I think now is the time for me to put my talents, my passion, my skills, experience to a higher use for Maryland. And with Brian Frosch, our Attorney General, announcing his retirement, I think I can make a much greater impact in Maryland as Maryland's Attorney General.
I ask that because, and it's interesting that you mentioned extremism. One could argue that 2021 has seen a great deal of that on Capitol Hill, starting with what we saw on January 6th and some of the reaction that we have seen from your colleagues on the other side of the aisle since January 6th and even before that, and even with the Democrats having control of the House, technically having control of the Senate, and of course having control of the White House, political control of the White House, and yet things have moved apparently at a snail's pace. Do you believe that you may be able to do a better job as an attorney general in Maryland and get things done as opposed to, if you'll allow me, toiling in the vineyards as a congressman in Maryland and trying to fight the good fight on Capitol Hill?
And, you know, Harold, both offices, right, and both institutions, Congress and the Attorney General and others, but as we're focusing on these two institutions and offices, play an important role, right? Congress, we are establishing the laws that govern behavior, acceptable and unacceptable behavior in society, right? And we say, hey, if you're a member of an extremist group and you're going to commit insurrection on the Capitol, then we're going to prosecute you. That's against the law. If you're a member of an extremist group and you want to be in the military, well, there's no place for you. But the Attorney General enforces these laws. And as the chief law enforcement or legal officer in Maryland, it'll be my responsibility to make sure that every Marylander is protected under the law, every community is empowered, and that we're doing everything we can to address extremism. You mentioned January 6th. I've been focused on extremism for a number of years, but on January 6th, we saw extremists, insurrectionists attack, assault the Capitol. And what we found during the prosecutions and investigations is that 20% or so of those who have been indicted for insurrection on the Capitol had military ties and affiliation. That's why I've introduced provisions in the Defense Authorization Act to make sure that we exclude and we bar enlistment and membership in the military to people who want to be part of those groups. As Attorney General, I'll be working with state's attorneys, the U.S. Attorney General, the FBI, to make sure that we are addressing extremism in communities throughout Maryland.
So I guess, but to my question, let me ask it this way, and correct me if I'm wrong, you are supportive of the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, correct?
Oh, absolutely. John Lewis Voting Rights Act, also H.R. 1, which expands the access to the ballot. Absolutely. And we know that the holdup is in the Senate.
Exactly.
We've got a number of... Right.
Exactly. And you were also supportive of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act.
Not only am I supportive of the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act, but leading the effort with Hank Johnson out of Georgia to make sure that the Department of Defense is not selling military hardware to local law enforcement, which has only served to militarize that relationship between law enforcement and the community. So absolutely, big advocate for the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act to make sure that our law enforcement serve more as guardians of our community and not sort of a warrior-like a relationship between law enforcement and the community.
So I ask again, even though, for example, with the Voting Rights Act, even though the big holdup where it can't even get to the floor of the Senate, and it passed easily, you know, in the House, you know, just from an emotional, from a political standpoint, with, you know, you in, you know, working in the House, did you just get a little politically fatigued and say, look, it's easier for you to be a king in Annapolis for the sake of this conversation, assuming that you win AG, that you can have your own agenda as AG, as opposed to, you know, like I said, toiling in the vineyard and fighting that good fight in the House?
Yeah, no, listen, Harold, we need people toiling in the vineyards on Capitol Hill to make progress where we can make progress, and we have. But you are accurate as you describe the Attorney General's role, you know, where you are able to push an agenda, convene stakeholders, take actions and decisions that I think have a much more immediate impact on the lives of Marylanders. There's no doubt about it. I mean, there is a fundamental difference between being an attorney general or being governor and being in Congress or even the Maryland General Assembly for that matter. But don't get me wrong, the work that's happening on Capitol Hill is important. It's just different.
Yeah, yeah. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking to Maryland Congressman Anthony Brown about politics, all things politics. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810. Let's go to Yvonne. Yvonne calling from Bowie. Yvonne, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Mr. Fisher. How are you? It's so good to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. Good to hear yours too, Yvonne. What's on
thank
your mind?
Thank you. Mr. Brown, you know, you talk a very good game. And I remember when I met you at Safeway one day when you was campaigning, you had promised everybody the world and what you was going to do, and you fell through. You didn't do anything like you said that you would do.
Well, and Yvonne, but let me say this, Yvonne, and I'm sure the congressman can speak for himself, but let's not do any broad-based attacks. Let's be specific. What are you talking about?
Okay, I remember when I called his office and I wanted to speak with him in reference to starting my own business before I start working for a huge Fortune 500 company like I work for right now. But he was he was campaigning back then off what he's going to do for Maryland and all of that. And I didn't see anything. And then when I called his office, the staff was very nasty to me. So, you know, I just have mixed feelings about you running for attorney general. That's what you said, right?
Yeah.
Is that what you said, Mr. Brown?
Yeah. Well, Congressman Brown, your response to what Yvonne is sharing with us.
Sure. Yeah, and I think, Yvonne, first of all, let me say that if that was your experience with me and my office, I apologize because that is definitely the exception. My district office, we have a team of very exceptional professionals. And in fact, this summer, my district office team received an award from the Congressional Management Institute for Transparency and Accountability among all of the 435 members of the House of Representatives. And we received that award. They received it, my team, because of a number of things that we do. We do a small business workshop every year. We do a nonprofit workshop every year. We respond to literally tens of thousands of requests from constituents, everything from how to help small businesses, helping our veterans, our seniors, people seeking passports. So, but I take ownership. So if you didn't get the service that you expected, and you should expect high service, then I apologize for that. But I am very proud of the work that my team has done in providing constituent services to our small businesses, our families, residents of the 4th Congressional District. So please give us a call and give us another opportunity because my team has been recognized for outstanding constituent service, and we want to have an opportunity to serve you as well.
Okay. Yvonne, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. DeMarcus calling from Bowie also. Thanks for calling, DeMarcus. What's on your mind? DeMarcus, are you there? DeMarcus, give me a call back if you can. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Maryland Congressman Anthony Brown about politics, about his political future, and also where he was and, as I said, where he's going. I do want to talk to you about more about what's happening on Capitol Hill, even though you are not, you know, part of this January 6th investigation. But you certainly do have, you know, eyes and these things are certainly part of what everyone is paying attention to. You know, certainly the big headline, President Trump lost a big legal battle. Executive privilege is not extended to him as it relates to documents that he wanted to keep secret. Now, certainly the appellate process is going to move forward, but until such time as that until such time as that happens. Your thoughts about last night's court decision and the executive privilege process?
Look, I think it was a good decision, and I certainly hope and expect that if appealed, that it will be upheld on appeal for at least two reasons. Number one is, a former president should not have standing when it comes to executive privilege over public documents. They are not personal documents. They are documents that are kept and maintained and recorded in his official capacity. So if the current administration, if President Biden's administration determines that a privilege should not be extended, then the courts should honor that, number one. Number two is, given the nature of the documents and what President Trump was seeking to conceal, I would hope that even if he was president, that the courts would pierce that privilege to allow full transparency to the American people about his efforts to undermine democracy, to overturn or at least prevent the certification of an election. Democracy prevailed on that day, but unless America knows fully the extent to which President Trump sought to undermine it, we are at risk of similar threats to democracy in the future.
Yeah. I need to take a break, but when we come back, we're going to take some more phone calls. Charles calling from D.C., we're going to talk to him. Shay calling from Maryland, we're going to talk to Shay. We're also going to talk to Kevin calling from Virginia. You will be able to hear the program, so please do not hang up. As always, we will be taking phone calls even until 8 o'clock with Maryland's 4th Congressional District Representative Anthony Brown, attempting to make the transition from Congress to the AG's office in Maryland. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast. It's on our website on WHUR.com. You can download also the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. We're back in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are talking to Maryland's 4th Congressional Representative Anthony Brown about all things politics. He is not seeking a fourth term on Capitol Hill. He is running for Maryland's Attorney General seat that is being vacated. He, for the retiring Brian Frosch, the AG in Maryland. If you have a comment, if you have a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Charles calling from D.C. Charles, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. Thanks for being able to call.
Sure.
Congressman Brown, my question to you is, what is it that you think you can do prior to leaving office as congressman, and what is it that you think you can do upon being elected as AG to address the context that a lot of black males are placed in that kind of necessitates crime as it pertains to the, you know, not being placed on pathways to get into various careers, you know, the standardized testing, the you know, the college-only approach. We know that doesn't work for everyone, and it seems like a lot of young men are kind of forced into the street, and we know what that lifestyle brings. And so just trying to get understanding, like, what is it that you have been doing to kind of address this issue? We know poverty plays a huge role into crime and violence, and more importantly, what would you do in that position as AG, as we know, with you know, public policy can do to kind of necessitate some of these issues?
Great question, and I appreciate it. And
essentially the most important thing that I can do for the remainder of my time in Congress. And it shouldn't take the next 14 months to do it. It needs to happen in the next 1 to 2 weeks. And that's to pass President Biden's Build Back Better agenda. And why do I say that? It's the provisions of the Build Back Better agenda that are going to support young black men in developing the skills and the training to fill those jobs that we are creating with the infrastructure bill. It's the Build Back Better that is going to fund universal pre-K. So black children who today do not have access to quality pre-K education, and it hurts them throughout the life of their education and their ability to become career or job ready or college ready, we've got to invest in universal pre-K. The Build Back Better is what extends the child tax credit that has lifted families out of poverty. And that's why it's so important that we don't stop with what we did last week by passing an infrastructure bill. If that's all we do, then we are not going to ensure that the benefits of that investment are available to everybody. And I'm focusing on black and brown communities. And that's where the Build Back Better agenda is important. And that's why I've been fighting to get both pieces, the infrastructure and the Build Back Better passed, so that we can ensure that everybody in this country has an opportunity to be successful. When I'm Attorney General, everything that I do, because remember, the Attorney General represents the state of Maryland, state government. But what is state government? It's the people of Maryland. So everything I do will be through a lens of equity, whether it's education or addressing environmental issues or quality health care or affordable housing. Are the decisions that we make in state government fair and just and equitable for everyone, regardless of race, gender, ethnicity, geography? And that's a very important role that the Attorney General and the 300-plus attorneys who work for the Attorney General and advise the decision-makers to ensure that that's what we do. So every Marylander has an opportunity for a quality education, job opportunities, and for success in Maryland.
Okay. Charles, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Shay, calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling, Shay. What's on your mind?
Thank you, first of all, for having this platform.
Sure.
I call to thank Congressman Brown. First of all, I'm a disabled veteran, and I'm a fellow veteran because I know he's a veteran also. Because I attended, he had so many town hall meetings, and I attended every one except for one, I believe. And you could speak face to face with him. It might have been not been an opportune moment when the young lady that spoke before, when she had, and it sounded like it was personal. It was personal with us, but he was addressing everybody. It was a room full of people each time I went to the town hall meetings. I am the squeaky wheel because I didn't get due process in my hearing. I'm going to keep doing that. So you say you have another 14 months. I will be in touch with your office, and I'm going to be going through this again, and this is a long time, but I still appreciate what you have done so far. So I want to say that you can't, you don't have the power. That's why you have help in your office. I wish I could work there with him, because that's what I'm going to do. After mine is settled, I want to put forth to help other veterans and other people in my community to know the truth and to know their power. Okay, so thank you very much. That's it.
Shay, thank you so much. Congressman
Harold,
Brown.
Harold, let me, if I could, I want to pick up on that very important point. First of all, I want to thank Shay.
She's still on, by the way. She can still hear you, but go ahead.
Excellent. She's a fine example of how veterans continue to give back to the community, and that's why tomorrow on Veterans Day, it's so important that we celebrate Shay and the countless number of Americans who have served in uniform. But constituent services for veterans, that is the largest category of requests that we get. And veterans ask us, can you help us in processing or getting processed
our disability benefits, our health benefits, our educational benefits. And my team spends a lot of time on that. So I say to all the veterans who are listening, if you have issues with the VA, and the VA does a great job in serving our veterans, but, you know, from time to time, stuff falls through the cracks. It doesn't happen fast enough. That's where my office comes in, and we can play an important role to help our veterans get the benefits, the access to services that they deserve. So thank you, Shay, for giving me an opportunity to talk a little bit about the constituent services that we provide to veterans.
Okay. Shay, again, thank you so much. And you know, certainly tomorrow's Veterans Day, so thank you for your service. And happy Veterans Day to you. Yes, ma'am. Let me go to Kevin. Kevin calling from Virginia. Kevin, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you for the platform you have here.
Yes,
sir. And I wanted to say I had the pleasure of meeting you, Congressman Brown, a few years ago at Addison Road Station, and we spoke about my question to you was then why do we never see anyone until it's time to run for office? You explained how you all are so busy doing all these other things, but to me that, you know, I've pondered over it still for a few years. It's almost like having an absentee father who then comes around every birthday and then wants to say, hey, here I am, look at this great present, but you only see me once a year. You know, why can't you all find more time to be in the community so that when it's time for election, we have that personal relationship with you guys instead of we just seeing your poster up every couple years or every 6 years or whatever it is.
Well, hey, Harold, can I ask a question?
Yeah, please go right ahead.
Have you ever have you ever attended any one of my town halls?
No, sir, I have not. I can't say I have.
And do you live in the 4th Congressional District?
No, I don't live in the 4th Congressional District.
Yeah, he's in Virginia, okay. But go ahead.
Okay, right. So I can't answer the question for all elected officials. What I can tell you, if you were in the 4th Congressional District, you probably wouldn't be asking that question. I conduct 2 town halls a month during the pandemic. I've done it virtually. I attend almost every town hall request I get. Again, I mentioned this summer we got a Transparency and Accountability Award from the Congressional Management Institute because we are in the community. And so I don't know what's happening in Virginia. I know you have great representatives over there. I don't know what they do in the community, but we are in the community. We hold workshops, town halls. During the pandemic, we had countless information webinars on COVID testing and vaccinations and health issues and how to access, you know, the food bank and, you know, you name it. So I understand the frustration that many voters have, but I invite you to move to the Maryland's 4th Congressional District because you won't have it in this district.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir, and I appreciate your service. I do.
All right.
Well, Kevin, thank you so much for your phone call, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I do want to go back to an issue on Capitol Hill that I think a lot of people can certainly relate to. And one of the things that we've discussed on this program ad nauseum, and so we're going to add it again to this conversation. And this is about just the I think the Democratic infighting as related to the infrastructure bill and even Build Back Better. It seems to me that, I mean, my goodness, talk to me about what appears to be this Democratic infighting. And it almost appears that getting the Democrats together, even in the House, is like herding cats. And at least from the outside, why does it appear that the Republican leadership seems to have such a stranglehold on its rank and file, and that the Democrats just don't seem to be able to get their act together and follow the leader while they have control? Because as we know, this is, you know, an election year, the midterms are coming up, and things could very well change, making things very, very difficult for President Biden when midterms come again?
Yeah, you know, democracy is messy. There's just no, there's, I mean, it is messy. It is a deliberative process, right? We're not in an authoritarian government, right? You've got 435 members in Congress, 220 plus Democrats, and we do have the gavel, but even within our caucus, it's a diverse caucus, and people have ideas and views and interests that they are promoting. When I say interests, the interests of the people that they represent. So you've got to find consensus. You've got to get a majority. It's messy. You know, and this is nothing new. 30 years ago, 60 years ago, 90 years ago, it was just as messy. What has changed is that the process is now more visible to the public because of the 24/7 news cycle, the social media. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but the public now has an insight into the messiness of democracy. And at the end of the day, we need to be judged not by how clean and quick the process took, but what were the results. And we've got a good result with the infrastructure bill, $1.2 trillion, almost $600 billion of that is new money. That's wastewater and clean water. I think about children who are drinking water out of pipes that still are laced with lead. I think about the investments in mass transit and how important that is for WMATA and, right, the Washington Metro, both rail, light rail, and bus. So we've done good things, and that's what we should be judged on. The Build Back Better, and we talked about that earlier in the show, which has so many important things, the universal pre-K, the child care, expansion of the Affordable Care Act. We're going to get that done. And at the end of the day, we should focus on what's in there and what we accomplish and not get caught up on the messiness of the process. Sure, I would like to get this done quicker, but what's more important to me is the results. And I think we're going to see that when it comes to healthcare, when it comes to education, when it comes to the environment, we are going to see tremendous results in the Build Back Better Act.
Mm-hmm. Are you concerned about what we could see with our veterans in the aftermath of the exodus from Afghanistan? I mean, it was noisy when it happened, and we brought the troops home, but I suspect that at some point we're going to see a wave of health services, even mental health services, or some kind of something, that's a technical term, some kind of something that is going to be required to support those troops who have been in Afghanistan before you leave office. What is your biggest concern?
Sure. My big concern and one of the priorities, I'm on the House Committee on Veterans Affairs. I'm also on the House Armed Services Committee.
Yes, exactly.
So we need to take care of our veterans of all eras and all generations. And when it comes to Iraq and Afghanistan, we're seeing a tremendous rise in mental health, the need for mental health services. And unfortunately, regrettably, the rise in suicide. So one of our number one priorities is addressing the increasing suicide rate among veterans. And one of the things that the data shows us is to really get after that problem, we've got to make sure that we're doing a lot better staying in touch with the men and women who leave active duty, that leave reserve duty, when they come home, when they take off the uniform, and keep them connected to the services, the programs that are intended to benefit them. When you look at the suicide rate among veterans and those veterans who commit suicide, 5 out of 6 of them are not even connected to the VA system.
so they're sort of off the radar. We need to keep them on the radar to make sure they're getting the services they need, job opportunities, employment, right, health care, educational services, housing services. And when we do that, we are going to make tremendous strides in addressing the mental health needs, lowering the suicide rate among veterans. I know it sounds like I'm oversimplifying it, but I'm just trying to answer your question in a short period of time. I think mental health services addressing suicide rates is one of the highest priorities in this among this generation of veterans and what we can do to support our veterans. I don't want anyone to think that everybody that takes off the uniform has behavioral health or mental health challenges. But we do know that we're seeing an increased rate, and we've got to get after that.
One of the other things, and this goes to the heart of, again, the House committees that you belong to, and you mentioned WMATA, and I'm not suggesting in any way, shape, or form interference, but I am suggesting in every way, shape, and form interference, because you know what's happening with Metro. You know, right now, the safety situation with Metro, to put it frankly, is none too good. Is it time for General Manager Paul Wiedefeld or some of the other key players, decision makers, to be called on the wonderful plush carpet of a House committee hearing on Capitol Hill, and somebody such as yourself or others say, "What are you guys doing?"
Sure. Look, I also sit on the Transportation Infrastructure Committee.
That's why I asked.
Right. That's right. And we have jurisdiction over the matters, the issues that are raised, as does the Government Oversight and Reform Committee. We recognize that safety and reliability, and really safety first, it's crucial. You cannot operate a system unless it's a safe system. And we've seen far too many incidents, accidents, mishaps, many of which have resulted in loss of life. And for a minute there, WMATA was making a turnaround. Safety record was improving. Ridership was improving as reliability was improving. And then of course, we've seen the most recent incident with the defective steel wheels. So what Congress has done, and we've included in this reauthorization for WMATA funding, and that's what we did last week in the infrastructure bill, we tie federal funding to the establishment of an inspector general's office for WMATA to laser-like focus on safety issues, with reporting requirements back to Congress on what they're doing to improve safety on Metro Rail and Metro Bus. It's important for the well-being of riders, and it's the only way that you're going to build confidence in the system to get ridership back to pre-pandemic levels as we move forward.
But would you support a hearing, you know, to find out, you know, who knew what and when? Because I think that's one of the questions that has been asked persistently since the October 12th derailment. And there have been questions about what General Manager Paul Wiedefeld knew and did not know, what he was told and was not told, and now, you know, he says he was not told. And so, I mean, it is Watergate-esque in that, you know, what did the general manager know, and when did he know it? Okay, well, if he didn't know, then who knew? Somebody had to know. And it just seems, there just seems to be a lot of obfuscating and deflecting on this question You know, because a lot of people in WMATA are saying, well, we want to just focus on making sure that this doesn't happen again. Yes, we understand that. And that makes all the sense in the world. But the reality is that prior to that, there is a reason why this happened and someone knew. And certainly someone needs to get to the bottom of that. And so should that not be, you know, within the purview of you know, a House committee, or am I overstepping or overstating that?
No, you're not overstating it. And in fact, my office has been in touch with Delegate Eleanor Holmes Norton, Congresswoman Eleanor Holmes Norton. She chairs the Surface Transportation Subcommittee. We've been working together on drafting. We want to draft first inquiries to WMATA, and so that we can have an understanding and then determine whether or not do public hearings, does that make the difference? Does sending them a set of interrogatories for them to answer questions, does that make a difference? So we are working together to get the answers to those questions. What were the underlying issues? What did people know? But more importantly, what are the changes you have to make going forward? So it is definitely within the jurisdiction of Congress. It is on our radar, and I'm working with Eleanor Holmes Norton to determine the next best step for us on Capitol Hill.
So here's the other. Here's another question for you. For the sake of this conversation, let us say that you were to be elected as Maryland's Attorney General. Would you support recreational marijuana in Maryland? Certainly you supported decriminalization, but D.C. has recreational use in limited form. Virginia is moving in that direction. We know there are laws in Virginia that are coming on board in a year or so. Do you believe that it is time for Maryland to move in that direction?
I think adult use legalization of cannabis is the direction that we're moving, that we should be moving. And I think that's where Maryland is going to get to that place. And I support that. 8 years ago, when I was running for governor, the position I took then was I supported the decriminalization of marijuana. I supported medical marijuana. And at that time, I said, there are many states or several states that are moving in the direction and have already legalized adult use. Let's look at their experience, the challenges, the difficulties, the opportunities. We have ample experience now to make the decision for Maryland that, yes, we should move towards adult use legalization of cannabis. It should be regulated. It should be taxed. Similarly to alcohol, and I think that's the direction that we're moving in, and I would support that.
So what should happen, and this is the common question, so what should happen to those people who are now serving time for the sale of marijuana? And marijuana only, no violent crime, but perhaps they, let us say again for the sake of argument, that Maryland gets to the point where, as you said, it is adult use, taxed, legally sold. And so you've got John Smith, who is serving time for illegal sales that, you know, for the same amount that, you know, under a new Maryland law is now legal. Should that John Smith be released from prison?
So that's a very nuanced question, and I say that not to avoid it, but just to give me the opportunity to explain.
Sure.
Look, there are those who have been prosecuted and convicted for distribution. We're talking large quantities. Even in a framework where you had adult use legalization of cannabis, that would, I'm sure, continue to be unlawful conduct. So if we're talking about distribution, let's put that aside because I don't think those are the people that we need to provide relief to. I think your question is talking about like small quantity sale, right? Nickel bags, a joint here and there. I think we should really take a look at expunging those records to the extent that people are serving time, releasing them. Typically, you're not spending time for small quantity sale, certainly not for possession. But we should do everything to make right for those people, to remove the stain and to make them whole, to remove the barriers to employment opportunities, housing opportunities. So I'm definitely all about that. But you got to put aside your distributors, large quantity distributors who were you know, arrested, prosecuted, convicted, and incarcerated. I'm not seeking relief for that. Yeah. But I do want to seek relief for use, small scale, small quantity possession, and sale, small quantities, nickel bags, dimes. I don't know what the cutoff is, but you know, the goal here is not to penalize people or to not to continue to penalize people for something they did yesterday, when today we recognize that that should not be unlawful conduct.
Yeah. Anthony Brown, Maryland's congressman from the 4th Congressional District. I guess that's, you know, I'll let you run for AG and I'll just ask the questions. I couldn't do it, but.
you ask great questions. You conduct great interviews. You got a great audience, a great listening audience. I appreciate the time being on with you. So we'll make a deal. You stay where you are. I'll get to where I'm going, and I look forward to being back on with you.
Good luck to you. Happy Veterans Day. Be safe, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
All right. Take care.
Absolutely. That is the Daily Drum for this Wednesday, November 10th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.